Hey, it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence 104.4. Stacy.
Max Kaiser, it's been a momentous week. So what has happened since the last time we were here? Barclays has now been fined. I was going to say charged, but they've just been fined for rigging global interest rates. They have paid a small fine of $200 million. Nice job if you can get it, isn't it?
Yeah. Barclays got caught up in the manipulation scandal. So, nothing new here. I mean, rigged market capitalism. They paid a fine. Did they have to? Was it part of that thing where they have to? They're able to admit without having to admit guilt. Did they go through that bit?
Yeah. Well, it's only the FSA and the CFTC that charge them, so they can only charge them with civil fines. I guess they didn't have to admit any guilt. They just paid the fine. There was $200 million for rigging the markets, and there was another $160 million for some other sort of bizarre thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they pay that fine by continuing to rig markets, because there's nothing that will be put in place to stop the rigging of these markets. And LIBOR market, it's a multi-hundred-trillion-pound market, and they're siphoning off cash from that market and paying themselves huge bonuses. And Bob Diamond is right up there with Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein and the others, in the pantheon of banking no good nicks. I was supposed to go on BBC two times last week, once for this week with Andrew Neil, and another time for Newsnight. It's interesting that BBC won. Calling me suddenly after 5 years of reporting this. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think you got a lot of attention when you were on that Channel 4 program with those, lame comedians. And when you said that we should hang the bankers, remember David Mitchell got all upset and everybody was like, oh, this is just wrong. Well, I think now they're starting to realize, I mean, you saw the instinct there immediately from BBC One this week and then BBC Newsnight, where they were like, hey, there's a guy who said these guys should have been punished. He told us, he's told us over the years that these guys were hardcore criminals. And, everybody keeps mollycoddling them. And by the way, all this evidence about the interest rate rigging, The rigging goes back to 2005 up to 2010. This is the information they have. So they were doing it through the crisis, after the crisis, after all this information came out, and David Cameron was saying we have to stop banker bashing. Mm-hmm. So remember this, that they were continuing to do this major crime. The fabric of the global capitalist system is the interest rate market, and they were rigging it.
Mm-hmm. And people will say, well, what is it exactly that they were doing? And I'd like to say that the minutiae of the technicalities of this particular scandal are not what we should be focusing on. Yes, we could spend some time talking about LIBOR and how rigging that market resulted in some fraud, but all of these are basically the same crime, whether it's AIG, Madoff, Lehman Brothers, Barclays, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, that they had their $2 billion, now it's $9 billion scandal on top of the MF Global scandal. It just basically comes down to theft. I mean, if you say, somebody stole my jewelry out of my house, would your response be, well, did they go in through the window or the door? What kind of shoes were they wearing? Why would you become obsessed with all of the details aside from the basic point, which is that a theft was committed? So, we can talk about the particularities of this crime, and but that would be missing the point. I mean, you know what? Also, you know, the story in The Guardian said that Barclays was caught attempting to manipulate markets. Now, interest rate markets. But again, so why do they use this word attempted? Because they were caught rigging markets. Is it because of the fact that they weren't, they were allowed to just pay a fine and not claim and not have to admit guilt as part of the civil suit? Therefore, the Guardian newspaper would have to comply with that and say that they attempted to steal the money, or is it just shoddy journalism?
I think that's one of their defenses in the case of a criminal case against them, because there could still be criminal charges. It certainly won't come from the UK, but it could come from the Department of Justice in America. I mean, there's a small, small, small chance, right? And should they do that? They're saying that there's no evidence that they succeeded in their false, you know, bids, false submissions for LIBOR rates.
Well, the issue is that they can't determine how much money they stole.
Yeah.
But it is unequivocal that they stole money.
Yeah.
But they just can't determine how much money they stole. So that doesn't qualify for the use attempted to steal money. So again, I don't. Is it shoddy journalism, or is it? I don't understand why they use this word attempted. I mean, okay, in the case of other situations, well, they allegedly stole money. It's because
no, it's cognitive dissonance, honey. Like, you know these people and what they are, and you're able to say these are hardcore criminals. They should face severe penalties to have a deterrent. These other people have a view of what society is, and that if you're rich, you must be a good, naturally holy, sort of godly endowed person, and that let's all just be good guys together. Let's be, you know, let's like these guys, and then they'll make us all rich. They'll trickle down to us. You could see their mindset, their worldview, and then the cognitive dissonance when they see the blatant crime after blatant crime after blatant crime, day after day, month after month. We're reporting on this in the Kaiser Report, and they laugh at it. But now, you know, we saw the same sort of thing when the financial collapse happened. You also got the likes of the BBC contacting you because they were like, wow, you were saying all this would happen, and it did. Here they're doing it again, where they're like, wow, you said these guys were hardcore criminals, and it appears that they are, but they don't want to believe it. They still don't want to believe that these guys are just hardcore criminals ripping off the system, and that they have no interest whatsoever in capitalism. Now, the likes of The Guardian and the BBC would call you anti-capitalist. They don't notice that they haven't called Bob Dimon an anti-capitalist banker.
Right. Well, I mean, look at Matt Taibbi's article in Rolling Stone. He uncovered a bid rigging scandal involving banks such as JP Morgan. And he said this is a mafia collusion bid rigging scandal. And the massive crime was committed, and the jury found a massive crime to be committed, and they're in jail. So, okay, if the Guardian newspaper, what about this as a journalistic turn of phrase? Bob Dimon at Barclays involved in fraud involving LIBOR, manipulating LIBOR, as similar to what has been reported by Matt Taibbi in America with the bid rigging scandal that just resulted in jail terms, Bob Dimon is involved in a collusion with other banks to manipulate markets for an amount in excess by some estimates of $100 million in fraudulent gains, but could range as much as $200 or $300 million, if not more, in fraudulent gains. Now, that certainly fits in with any scope of any, you know, journal. You know, why can't they do even that? I mean, why does it have to say that Barclays attempted to manipulate rates? I mean, that's just, it gives the wrong impression. So people think that Barclays tried to commit a crime and somehow they were stopped from committing a crime. And that's what gives people a false sense of security, as if these crimes are being thwarted before they're committed. Like, a man tried to kill his neighbor, but cops were there to stop him. So people say, well, the cops are doing a good job. I guess I should feel safer in my house because that guy didn't get killed. So it's false reporting. It's false reporting. It's false reporting.
Well, there is such a thing as the crime being thwarted, but the police arresting, they thwarted a conspiracy to commit a crime that people were committing, they were planning on committing a crime. Here, it's very much the same as the police stopping four guys plotting to rob a jewelry shop, or six guys plotting to create a terrorist event. So what's the big deal? Even in the giving the Guardian, for example, the benefit of the doubt, why, if they were reporting on five guys from Catford, or Lewisham, they would say that these guys were in a conspiracy, caught in a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, that's what they could have said about Barclays. You know, that's there in a conspiracy to commit a crime. That is in the emails. They're widely bragging that we're going to rig the rates.
Yeah. The company itself has admitted their guilt. So who is the Guardian protecting by making it, by obfuscating the words of the very own words of the company itself, admitting its own guilt? And yes, if it were youths looting a store for, a few bottles of soda pop, the Guardian, of course, would say, they wouldn't say that the youths were trying to rob the store. They would say the youths robbed the store. The owner of the shop was unclear at this point how much he was robbed from. That doesn't mean that the youths didn't end up robbing the store because the store owner wasn't sure how much was robbed. So it doesn't make journalistic sense to say they tried to rob the store. They walked away with stuff in their pockets, but the shop owner wasn't sure how much, so we can't really say they robbed the store for sure, because even though they admitted they were bragging about it, they admitted in the emails, they implicated themselves, and they were caught with stuff in their pockets, we still can't say for sure that they robbed the store, because the shop owner is not sure whether it was $50 or $52 that was stolen.
Well, Max, but the problem is, it's also the population, because recall, and maybe I'll bring this back up on maxkaiser.com from last year. Recall the hundreds and hundreds of Brits who came to our site when you said STFU, David Cameron, you can't have plundering in the city of London and outlaw it in the ghetto. The population itself, especially the lower middle class sort of, in the range right above, the same group being plundered by the city, they hate poor people. They hate guys that live in the ghetto. They hate them. And a large part of the population believes a 12-year-old kid living in a ghetto deserves years in prison for stealing a two pound bottle of wine, a 2 pound bottle of water. Sorry. They don't want that rich person to go behind bars because, first of all, they can't understand the complexities. They want to focus on the minutiae, and they don't want it to be that way. They don't want to know the truth that they have no chance to be rich unless they can become made men before they can whack the right people and become a part of this group, the likes of Tony Blair and Bob Diamond, to get part of that inner circle. They have this dream that they one day could too get away with murder and high crimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Guardian was good at going after Murdoch. They blew open the Murdoch case. Murdoch ended up, you know, having to testify at the inquiry. He's now leaving Britain with his tail between his legs, having been shown to be a shameless law-breaking fool who can't compete on any level, but can only make money by spying on people and rigging government contracts and influence peddling. So I don't understand why The Guardian can't apply the same journalistic standards to stories about the banking industry. Why do they become these shrinking violets when talking about Barclays Bank? Why not just simply state the truth about Barclays Bank? Why hide and couch the phraseology behind these caveats and very soft, vague language? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, it's exact same reason I'm saying, Max, is the cognitive dissonance, whether it's in the middle class striving to become one of those guys or the Guardian writers, is they call you anti-capitalist for pointing out Bob Diamond's crimes. Mm-hmm. And this is their mentality. Oh, you're just jealous, right? Mm-hmm. You're anti-capitalist. But that's their mentality. They're trying to protect their worldview. That these guys can't do this. There's no way that Bob Diamond and Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein, the kings and titans of industry and business, and they go to Davos and they speak with President Obama and David Cameron. So how can they possibly commit a crime? There's no way they would do this, despite all of the evidence. It just is piles and piles. Their files are massive. They could fill a whole room, and yet they refuse to see it. And in fact, so them seeing it, they would have to look at themselves and say, oh, I'm anti-capitalist based on my previous worldview.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true that we've been doing this for 9 years, and that most of the time when we point out bankers committing fraud and crimes, the comeback is that somehow that's an anti-capitalist statement, as if to point out criminal behavior is anti-capitalism, which sends a lot about what people feel is the definition of capitalism. In other words, well, the capitalism means stealing. That's capitalism. Well, no, I'm pro-capitalist, and I'm pro-free market. And that's why I hate these bankers, is because they're into central planning, central banking. They're anti-competition. They hate competition. They're rent-seeking, market-rigging, dangerous, radical thieves. That's why, as a capitalist, I don't like that. So the phrase anti-capitalist is used often. I mean, if you go to Newsnight or some BBC, they'll have a panel of people. They'll have a Bill Black talking about how these guys are stealing money, and then somebody from the city will call him anti-capitalist, and then Jeremy Paxman or whomever will get somewhat flummoxed and not know what to do with that. Now, recently, it seems, though, the people who are pointing out these crimes are not being painted as anti-capitalist. I'd say there's been a change in the last 3 months. I think going to the MF, back to the MF Global scandal, where remember, the crime took a new intensity because the Morgan actually reached into customer accounts and stole money from segregated customer accounts. So clearly, that's not you can't twist that, spin that as anti-capitalist. I mean, that's it broke down at that point because you had actual at the hand of Diamond actually reaching into people's pockets and just stealing it outright with no, and then claiming that their defense was the money vaporized. So I think that people in the media anyway, finally the penny dropped and they're like, oh my God, this really is just wholesale racketeering and larceny.
Well, that's also the problem, is that you see the situation that Newsnight is in. Is they look around at their list of guests and say, well, he was apologizing for Bob Diamond last year. This guy was too. This guy was too. This guy was too. This guy too. This guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. You know, they're all apologists for the system, and they are part of the system and don't want it to end. And now, in terms of anti-capitalism and people with cognitive dissonance, you know, a lot of libertarians and people in the gold market, there are certain people like Bob Moriarty at 321 Gold who would say that, you know, first of all, it's absurd to think JP Morgan can manipulate the silver market, he would say, because for every buyer, there's a seller. Now, there have been two stories we've covered, both by JP Morgan, by the way, that were wash trading. Mm-hmm. They were the buyer and the seller in the oil and natural gas market. And then they were the buyer and seller in with a high frequency trading algorithms. The SEC is looking at this. Now, thus they create the price, just like these guys at Barclays. And by the way, other banks, Citibank, UBS, HSBC, RBS, they're also involved in this rigging of LIBOR. They don't like the interest rate, especially at the time contracts are settling. So this is the other way that gold, for example, gets smashed that we've talked about. But it applies to all markets. You were an options trader, so you know that most options expire worthless because these guys rig it at the exact moment. They don't rig it every single day. They don't need to. They just do it when the contract is up, right?
Yeah, that's right. The expiration date for options is when you find most of the market rigging to engineer profitable trades or to avoid losing trades. But, you know, this idea also, let me put this other interest rate rigging scandal in a slightly different context. And let's talk about George Osborne, who, you know, bringing in his granny tax. Remember, George Osborne was saying that, well, we're going to remove some of the benefits to the pensioners in this country, in the UK. Because after all, they have been spared much of the austerity measures that have been implemented over the past couple of years. Now, that's extremely false. That's false. And that's really, insulting to people, the pensioners and savers, who not only have they participated in the austerity measures, who do you think's been underwriting the City of London and Wall Street's bonuses and profits for the past 5 years under a program called economic repression, which is a much harsher than little austerity measures tweaking on the margins. The savers have been by being subjected to quantitative easing that has forced their savings rates from 4 or 5% down to 0.5%. They've taken 80-90% cuts in income. That's beyond just tweaking on the margins for austerity. That these people are giving their lives for these crooked city bankers. And what is this LIBOR rate scandal all about? It's about artificially making rates cheaper so that the Wall Street scammers who are packaging fraudulent security packages don't have to pay more in interest. And where does that money come from? It comes from the people who would want higher interest rates, the savers who have, you know, put money aside, who are creating the capital that would be the basis for a capitalist system. That, you know, again, the people who are the true capitalists are being penalized by the growth of the cancer of financialized speculative kleptocrats who are the basis of the Cameron Osborne City of London axis of weasels.
Now, remember this knock-on effect. Now, most normal people are going to read Murdoch's press when the collapse happens and say, it was the poor schmuck next to me who took on more debt than he could afford. It's that jerk, not the criminals at the top. They do this. Most people, look in your heart out there, and you're going to say you hate the Greeks. They're lazy bums. But it's very similar to what has gone on here. They're hiding, they're creating price propaganda, they're creating perception. Goldman Sachs helped hide in a conspiracy that Bloomberg is trying to find out if it involves the ECB and EU Commission, that they hid the debt of Greece so that not only did the citizens not know, but investors in their bonds didn't know the true state of health of that economy. The same with these banks. What Barclays and RBS and HSBC and all these others were doing is they were, one of the things they wanted to do during 2008, 2009 is rig the LIBOR to make them look better, to make their health of the bank look better. So what sort of investors have invested thinking that it's better than it is. And when it all blows up and everybody loses money and the pension funds lose money and the you know, investors all over the world lose money, who, and by the way, you know, what often happens is the bondholders don't, you have to make good on those. So, you know, you're, whether you think you could turn away and just pretend it doesn't exist, you'll have to make those bondholders whole.
Right. Well, that's an important point, is that why was Barclay rigging the LIBOR market? It was to create, steal money from LIBOR to paper over gaps in their earnings statements, mm-hmm. because their earnings were collapsing due to the fact that they have no business model other than stealing money. And when they ran out of people to steal money from, they started stealing money from the LIBOR markets. So, you know, the Barclays earnings are a shambles. Barclays, just like J.P. Morgan, it's a balance sheet of a Ponzi schemester. They have no... If you were to do a forensic accounting of their balance sheet today, and this applies to J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and every big bank in the world, you would find that they have no collateral on their books to support their day-to-day activities. It's all based on washing trades on a daily basis for fees, and they generate income. Their income statement is healthy because they're churning their portfolio of worthless bonds. So they say, we churn a portfolio of worthless bonds. Our income statement is great. Our balance sheet, however, if you were to freeze frame it and do a forensic accounting of it, you would find, like in particle physics, where you can't have both the direction and speed of the particle, you would find that the balance sheet of Barclays Bank, if you were to freeze frame it and say, here it is, and get the location, here it is, you would not be able to make any sense of what it's worth, because it's worth less than zero. There's nothing there. It's just churning phantom securities in this multi-hundred trillion dollar derivatives markets and calling that an income statement. And when they can't make up for some quarterly earnings that's going to, you know, pay their salary and bonus for that quarter, they just wantonly go into the LIBOR market and steal from everybody who's on the other side of those transactions who wants higher interest rates because they're capitalists. So here you have a war against capitalists by the true anti-capitalist, Barclays Bank, who is attacking capitalism, who's attacking the economy, who is at war with the economy. They are at rogue. They are rogue traders. Bob Dimon is a rogue trader that is undermining the integrity of the UK economy in a way that is quite threatening to the survival of that economy.
By the way, I do want to point out Zero Hedge's great work on this LIBOR. They were the earliest that I can see. They provided a link to 3 years ago, January 22nd, 2009. This makes no sense. LIBOR by bank is the headline from 3 years ago. Everyone knows there's something very screwy about LIBOR, they wrote, with opinions ranging from it's way too high to the opposite. We also have been quite vocal in our opinion of the TED spread, but it's irrelevant for the time being. Lately, we have been looking at the most recent BBA data. So that's the British Bankers Association that is supposed to be like looking over. They basically deal with the LIBOR rate setting. We've been the most recent BBA data for the 3-month LIBOR submission by bank. And while the average is 1.122%, the range is quite wide, 1.04% at the tight end to 1.204% at the wide. What confuses us is that the banks that submitted the lowest rates are the ones that have the most governmental independence, notably Bank of America and JP Morgan, while the other end of the range is represented by pseudo-nationalized banks such as RBS, in which the UK government recently acquired a 70% stake, and UBS, which had all of its bad assets swept by the Swiss National Bank in exchange for a loan. The implication is that with more government involvement or even virtual nationalization, the cost to lend to another bank creeps higher when compared to entities such as Bank of America and JP Morgan, which still, at least theoretically, carry all their bad assets on their books. This intuitively is very confusing, as the cheapest LIBOR should come from the nationalized entities that have a full government backstop. So it turns out that a lot of the banks that were rigging it, so in this case they were putting in higher bids than what it should have been, and the reason was that they had bet that interest rates would go up, and their bets went wrong. They were going down. That was one of the things as well. So it was both in both directions at certain times during the crisis. They wanted themselves to look better than they were, but also some of the banks wanted to, but some of the banks also had placed bets, big derivatives bets, that interest rates would go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is interesting because, like, in the J.P. Morgan scandal, the reason they lost the $2 to $9 billion is they got caught out on the wrong side of a trade, and as part of their working their way out of the trade, they were manipulating the index that covers that trade to fool the rest of the market into buying into a market that had been fundamentally altered by changing the very index that covers that trade. So here with the LIBOR, there were trades put on that were based on LIBOR. LIBOR is the base rate. And when the trades start to go wrong, then they alter LIBOR, which has the effect of distorting the global economy. You remember after long-term capital management, what did Alan Greenspan do? He lowered interest rates in America. He lowered the discount rate. He lowered the Fed funds rate in America to bail out the speculators in Greenwich, Connecticut. So they altered the global economy to bail out speculators. So that happened in long-term capital management. Was there any ever penalty for that? No. So the moral hazard was carried forward. So you saw it with Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan. Now you're seeing it with Barclays and LIBOR. That fundamental crime that was committed in 1999 with long-term capital management of altering the global economy to bail out a few speculators, because there was no penalty, fundamental reform to stop that from ever happening again, it's become an ever frequent, ever greater problem.
Yeah, and it also shows that butterfly effect, of course, because here, you know, you see directly from the emails going back and forth between a Barclays trader and a Barclays submitter, the guy who submits the interest rate, what the LIBOR rate should be. It's their little deals. One, the trader saying, if the rates don't go up at you know, options expiration, I'm going to lose a lot of money. So can you put it in higher? Can you submit a higher bid? It's just that those two guys, from those two guys, is this butterfly effect of interest rates around the world having a ripple effect. And, you know, you see eventually that the whole system collapses.
Right. I mean, it's like a scandal involving the mafia would water down concrete or cement. Mm-hmm. And then 5 years, 10 years later, suddenly all these buildings are condemned because they find that the concrete or the cement was not delivered per specs, because the mafia substituted some of the fundamental ingredients to make it cheaper. So here you have banks who are supposed to be dealing with the concrete of the LIBOR rate, which is set in stone. This is supposed to be the ironclad, you know, rate upon which all transactions are tied. And it comes around that the mafia, that is Barclays and these other banks, decided to fundamentally alter the bedrock of the global multi-trillion dollar Forex market and LIBOR-tied market by substituting with cheaper ingredients, cheaper rates, and fraud. And now you have things crashing and things blowing up. And you have the mainstream media, like, again, The Guardian, you know, taking the kid gloves approach and implying that there's not much to see here, that there's only did they apply the same standard? If it turned out that the shard, this new building going up in London, that the steel that was delivered to build it was delivered fraudulently by contractors who were working with the mafia, and as a result, the building collapsed and, you know, killed 500 people. Would The Guardian write in the newspaper that, you know, that building, there's a rumor that it may have fallen and that people may have died, and it might be because of a fraudulent order for the steel that built it? We're not sure, But maybe we'll just ignore it.
Well, they would call it shoddy, Max, just like David Cameron. We must clean up shoddy banks. You know, compare that to how he called those young kids in the riots. He called them yobs in no uncertain terms. Why the shoddy? You know, words matter. This is what the population, you know, it's a way to, I know, calm them. You're trying to avoid a bank run or a lack of faith in the financial system. So you're saying, oh, it's just shoddy. Go back to sleep. Turn into Fox News. You can get it on Sky. Just calm down. Look, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes are getting divorced. That's more interesting. Go there, people. It's just some shoddy banks. We just need to tidy up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's leading to bigger catastrophes. You know, David Cameron, by refusing to take a stand against this attack against his people, mm-hmm. is opening them up to being more problems, and that's not a leader. You know, he's the Neville Chamberlain of banking industry. He came back with a meeting from Hitler. You know, in this case, Bob Diamond, saying, well, it's just a shoddy bank, and I'm sure we'll prevail in the end. You know, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Cameron and Osborne have disgraced the office of the prime ministership more than, you know, even Tony Blair at this point. And that's saying something.
And I notice another thing that's happening now. Somebody just told BBC Radio 4, according to Ian Fraser on Twitter, that London is seen as the Wild West from a financial regulation perspective. Now, of course, we've been saying this on Kaiser Report from the day one, almost the first episode. We were saying that London is the heart of fraud. It's not the Wild West. The Wild West was at least like, you know, there were no regulations out there, sure, but there was like free competition. People, you had to be good to survive. Here, you don't have to be good to survive. It's a rigged market. It's a criminal racket.
You know, they're trying to put a romantic spin by calling it the Wild West. I mean, we've had the courage to point out the blindingly obvious now for 9 years, that London is the global cesspool of regulation laxity, and that it's where the mafia goes to launder their money and to put on their wash trades, to manipulate earnings, to create a Ponzi scheme. Madoff went through London. AIG went through London. MF Global through London. JP Morgan's recent $2 to $9 billion loss is in Morgan. LIBOR scandal, London. Every major and not so major fraud in the banking community goes through London. Now, I've said that many times, and of course, you know, you get a lot of these trolls and you know, St. George's cross waving English patriotic football loving nincompoops who are like, you know, you're making a slight against my country. And my response is, yes, I am, you bonehead. Your country is a cesspool of fraud.
No, Max, wait. Those morons, by the way, like BNP Patriot, the guy who writes every single episode of Kaiser Report, if you go to the YouTube, that racist guy writes every single one. Little does he know he's actually helping us. Like, Google doesn't discern between bad and good comments. But the fact that they think the corporation of London has anything to do with them is just comical. That they're going to benefit anything from it, that they aren't there sitting ducks on a foie gras farm being farmed by the corporation of London that is beyond your laws.
Yeah, right. Why doesn't BNP Patriot demand that the city of London disincorporate itself and to join the country in which it's residing? Why is it a separate country within a country? They have their own laws, their own legal system, like the Vatican or Washington D.C. They're microstates within countries. It's its own little state. Why is this foreign state, a foreign power, sitting in the middle of London, which is setting up shop as a global money launderer and toxic derivatives dealer, and David Cameron is referring to them as a shoddy Unless, of course, he's incredibly corrupt and he's taking huge money under the table, which it certainly looks like that.
Well, you know, but the thing is, of course, I guess you see cognitive dissonance, because at the end of the day, were BNP Patriot to even have a job? I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he's probably collecting benefits, but spends his whole day hating people who are dark or new to the country and get benefits like him, or he imagines they're all getting benefits and he doesn't want them to have it because they're not white like he is. But I'm sure, you know, the fact that is that, you know, the taxpayers that support this guy, BNP Patriot, they are responsible for subsidizing and bailing out those banks in the Corporation of London who reside there, even though they have nothing to do with each other.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you just, and the media, the mainstream newspapers are just, they don't, maybe BNP Patriot might be a little bit better informed if the newspapers in the UK were more honest. Okay. The Guardian, you know, the only newspaper in the UK that has called me, for example, Mad Max, is the Guardian. The worst slights from the UK press for me have come from the Guardian. The only paper in the UK that's given me the proper due kind of respect has been Private Eye.
Yeah, they gave you a lot of respect. But that's because the Guardian also agitates far more for war than the so-called right-wing papers. So it is just, again, part of our team sort of sports politics. And, you know, the likes of BNP Patriot will say, that's just a left-wing paper and blah, blah, blah. It's a way for each other to hate each other because there's allegedly a left and a right-wing press. But I think because they just don't know. They're showing their ignorance. They just don't know what is capitalism, but they just want to be liked. They're like Tony Blair. They're a Tony Blair sort of paper. They just want to get along and just be liked by those powerful rich guys. They want to be part of the club.
Yeah, but then why go after Murdoch? Why did they bother going after Murdoch? If you're going to go after Murdoch, you're going to have investigative journalism. You should apply it toward not only the press, as is Murdoch, but you should apply it to the banking industry. I don't understand why the banking industry in the UK is constantly, by all press outlets, given this given that the benefit of the doubt, even though they for years and years now they've done nothing but repeatedly commit larceny over and over again at disrupting the economy, causing the government to resort to austerity to pay for their crimes, and people are suffering to pay for their crimes, and the press continuously just says, well, we don't know what they're doing. It looks tawdry. It looks, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but again, I just think it's they don't understand it. But also with, you see what when they started to go after Rupert Murdoch, they also had that Millie Dowler story. They knew that two policemen that were just arrested this week, two senior policemen, were the ones that gave access to Murdoch to this murdered child's phone, her mobile phone, her cell phone number. So that is an emotional hook for their audience. People understand that crime. But even then, you know, had that crime been committed by a yob in the ghetto, the population here would still be all over it. They wouldn't have moved on within a few days. You know, this was, in fact, I saw somebody tweet yesterday, though, is this the banking industry's Millie Dowler moment? Because there had been all sorts of evidence that Murdoch and his enterprise were hacking phones. Mm-hmm. But nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Until, because they were reading the paper. They wanted the news, but they wanted to know about the sex life of Hugh Grant. They wanted the details. But once...
Yeah, and even the journalist that Hugh Grant busted, his claim was that that's the way competitive journalists are. They break the law, and people seem to be okay with that. Similarly, in the banking industry is saying, well, that's how we compete. We break the law.
Yeah. So, but the population was not outraged at hacking Hugh Grant's phone because they wanted to know about his sex life. But once they had to look at, once they had the shock that they too were buying the newspapers for all the information about Millie Dowler, and they had to look in the mirror and see the grotesqueness that was themselves. Well, this is the Millie Dowler moment for the banking industry, is it? Do the people, the population, understand the grotesqueness of the system that they themselves are engaged in? And it's not capitalism. It's not capitalism. It's the casino gulag, as Max has said.
Well, is it the Millie Dowler moment? I mean, clearly, if I get two calls from BBC One on two subsequent days, okay, that's unusual because we've never had that call ever in 5 or 6 years, even though people have been demanding that to be the story. And so the question is, was it maybe the fact that we were named the most dangerous media, financial media in the world just a couple of weeks ago? I guess that got a lot of attention, the Max and Stacey Kiser report, the most dangerous financial media. You know, maybe that caught people's attention. I mean, I just did a thing in St. Petersburg talking about the banks are dead on YouTube. It got over 60,000 views. Maybe that got somebody's attention. But, you know, is it the Millie Dowler moment? It seems like there's definitely coming to a breaking point. We know that the banks are not going to stop committing crimes. And so there's something's brewing.
Yeah. Well, by the way, the woman at Newsnight who invited you, she was one of the producers on that Channel 4 show, the 10 o'clock show. So she knew what you had said there to that crew. And again, you know, the cognitive dissonance, the lengths people go to deny the reality, okay, because they have fabricated in their own minds a way things are supposed to be. So with David Mitchell and the blonde woman on that show, they were like horrified by that you were saying, like, hang the bankers, decapitate the bankers. Who was the one guy who agreed with you there?
The Goldman Sachs banker.
The Goldman Sachs managing director, yes.
Well, the thing is that show, Hang the Bankers, it stunned the panel. And in that moment, when they were stunned, I slipped in a bunch of stuff about Tony Blair and the regulators in the UK.
Yeah.
Which was information like which I thought was really more shocking than the Hang the Bankers. Hang the Bankers was just a flash grenade to stun the panel. And then I got that extra oxygen to slip in all this anti-Tony Blair stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to cover Tony Blair soon on the Kaiser Report. I've got a whole file on him I'm building up of some new interesting shocking stuff. Mm-mm. But because he's rearing his ugly head, his like little tapeworm is coming out of the fecal matter of the Corporation of London these days.
Oh my God, I can't wait for that. Tony Blair, he's what am I doing my next? Uh-oh, I'm gonna sneeze.
Here comes Brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM, Sneezes by Max Kaiser.
Yeah, can we not get a Turner Prize for that? It's art. It's a pile of dirt. It's an unmade bed. It's a sneeze. Like, give me a Turner Prize.
Yeah, hey, you know, Yoko Ono is doing an art and, you know, some sort of art exhibit with smiles. She's asking everybody to send in smiles. Why don't you have everybody send in sneezes? And then we can make a sneeze, CD.
Yeah, Sneeze Fest. We could have Sneeze Fest. You know, invite people from around the world to sneeze at Sneeze Fest.
Well, I'm sure just like Fart Club, there is a Sneeze Club. You know, they just throw pepper in each other's noses and sneeze together.
Yeah, well, that's the way they do it, don't they?
In the Corporation of London, for sure. You know, these guys are bored. Rigging markets, you know, it's so easy. It is boring, like what communism command and control is. There's a certain bleakness and grayness to life when you know the outcome constantly.
Right, the banality of evil. You know, the phrase that came out of the Holocaust and World War II is that the Nazis, you know, it's at some point, you know, just murdering people became extremely banal. You know, it was nothing to it, really. It was just a number in a book. They had books and thousands of books of names of dead people. And same thing on the city of London and on Wall Street. Fraud is become boring. It's not thrilling for these people, which is what I noticed when I was working on Wall Street. After 7 years on Wall Street, it's not thrilling to steal money anymore. You know, at first, it's a lot of fun, but after a while, it becomes boring. You just go to work, you call people up, you steal their money, you know, and then you go home, and it's just boring.
Well, because, you know, you often see with shoplifters, say like Winona Ryder, part of the reason why they do that is the thrill that they might get caught. Well, once bankers realize, like, that's why they keep on having to turn new bankers, is like they do it for a few years and then they realize that you can't get caught. It's a game. It's like rigged because you're not going to get caught. There's no way to get caught if you're part of this syndicate because there's nobody there to catch you. They don't, even if they, even if they catch you red-handed, they'll pretend they haven't seen a single thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they do catch you, you go to binding arbitration before a panel of brokers and bankers, who, of course, 99% of the time find you innocent. And or you get to pay a fine and not have to declare you're guilty. And then you pay for the fine by churning more customers and stealing more money.
Well, by the way, in the last few minutes, we will be interviewing Paul Craig Roberts next week on The Edge about this. But there's a new trade deal that Obama has been negotiating in secret for the last 2.5 years. And it's basically a trade deal like way, way, way worse than NAFTA, but it's written by the corporations. And speaking of this binding arbitration, this is essentially what the corporations have negotiated on our behalf. So basically what they'll be able to do is if they, you know, say a Bhopal happens in London, what happens is, first of all, they don't have to go to any court but this binding arbitration global court for them that is run by three of their appointees. And if there is any fine, then the taxpayers of that particular country fining them have to pay it. So if they commit a Bhopal in London, say they have to pay £10 million in fine. Well, the taxpayer has to pay it for the cleanup and the compensation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's again, it's disgraceful, it's disgusting, and you couldn't design a disease more effective than a fatal disease. I mean, this is like Ebola, a corporate Ebola. Ebola. That's just a flesh-eating disease that is being unleashed onto the global economy. And just like, I suppose, you know, for years, you know, the stuff people were taking to fight off diseases that's no good anymore. You know, those antibiotics, you know,
that gesture made me think you have a sword.
They're not effective anymore because the diseases have mutated beyond the antibiotics. So all of the regulations that were put in place against corporate malfeasance, fraud, and larceny have been overtaken by mutating corporations that are now coming to kill us.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good point, Max, because it's not just these diseases aren't getting worse because the way they're developing resistance is that if you're supposed to take the antibiotic for a week, some people are only taking it for 2 days. Well, this is the meek regulations on banks as well, because they're only doing little time. Instead of taking the full force of justice and the law down on them and genuine justice, instead of doing little tiny tweaks and here pay a fine without actually admitting guilt, you know, that's half measures, which makes the system more powerful and violent against you and aggressive. It's able to act more aggressive because now Barclays can just, you know, they'll just tell their you know, trader and submitter when they're rigging the bid not to put it in an email this time.
Yeah. And to pay for the fine, they have to more aggressively rig the market.
Yeah.
So they have to pay that fine somehow. They don't have a legitimate business to pay the fine. So their only business is fraud. So they have to ramp up the fraud to pay the fine. This is exactly what I've been saying about groups like Greenpeace when they go to Exxon and they say they take a half measure. They say you're committing these 10 acts of ecological travesty. Well, Exxon will say, well, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to buy insurance against those acts that you just told us that we're going to commit. And to pay for the insurance, we need to act even more aggressively against the environment to pay for the insurance. And we're going to lower operating standards to pay for this insurance. So it's actually worse.
Yeah, well, and, you know, finally on that, the worst standards. The very day, just on Friday, they opened up the Arctic to Shell, I guess, Shell Oil to go up there. On the very same day, they sent billions down to the Gulf of Mexico, the government, the taxpayer, to help clean up that spill, the still stuff happening down there. So that's they take it from you at the end of the day. But that's all the time we have for Max Kaiser.
Oh, well, it's time to say goodbye, y'all.